It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
Welcome back to the next room. It's always a good day when I get to step out in the studio. My little puppy is down at my feet. We had a nice walk this morning. Hopefully she will behave. Otherwise, I'll have to stop the interview and boot her out of the studio and make her go in the house, which makes her very sad. So you've been forewarned. You be a good girl. Thank you so much for tuning in today. My name is Jane Asher. My guest today is Kathleen Valley Stein. And she just finished writing a book called Loving Choices, Peaceful Passing. It's why my family chose hospice. Oh my gosh, this book just knocked me to my knees. It is so well done. It's so beautiful. It's raw. It's family pain. It's an authentic story. And I would encourage you to head to her website and get a copy, especially if you're going through anything like the rest of us seem to be going through at our age, is aging parents and making very, very important decisions. So without further ado, I'm going to get Kathleen hooked up to talk to me, and we are going to discuss all about her father's journey and why they decided hospice was the answer. So welcome to the show, Kathleen.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I am so happy to have connected with you. And I don't even know, there's so many avenues now through social media and through friends of friends and the beautiful Dying Expo. I don't even know how we connected, but I saw your book and I read a little piece on it and I thought, oh my goodness, this woman has to come on the show. Thank you first and foremost for sending me a copy of the book. I absolutely was so amazed. I kept reading and then I would put it down and I'd look at my husband and I'd say, this is so good. It's just a raw, truthful, painful story of you and how you dealt with your dad. So let's talk about this for a minute. Your folks are aging. They're in a home, like an assisted living environment, and your dad is diagnosed with cancer.
Yes, and they were living in a retirement community, excuse me, that had just been built. It was brand new, state of the art. So we had a hard time convincing them to sell their beautiful home perched on a hillside in Prescott and move into assisted living. But thank goodness they did, because it was very helpful when we were caring for them, when both of them, well, my mother was ill too. So when he was diagnosed with the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, that was when we knew we were close to the end, that this was not just another bout with colon cancer. This was serious, because his diagnosis was 4 weeks to live without treatment. So we were there.
Right. So as you know, your dad is in the hospital, he's going through this treatment. The radiation is burning his throat so badly that he cannot swallow. He's miserable. He tells you he doesn't want to live like this anymore. And that is when you decided to do what?
Well, actually, this is what my message to people. He told me I don't want to live like this anymore before the radiation.
Oh, wow.
And I did not say anything. I just freaked out because we were alone. I know he chose me. He had 5 kids to talk to this about, and he picked me. And I didn't have a response. I didn't know what to say. And my mother came in and interrupted the conversation. So I had that in my mind as he was going through those 3 weeks of radiation. I said to myself, maybe I should pick up the phone and call him and see if he really wants to do this. And I failed to do that, too. So when I walked into the hospital room, at that time, I was living in Los Angeles, a suburb of Los Angeles, and he was living in Prescott. So after I got there the evening that he was hospitalized, I said to myself, look, he's dying. I know he doesn't want to die a horrible death. He's not that kind of guy. He's a plain talking guy. You got to plain talk to your father. You got to face this. And so that's what we did. At that point, the stomach tube was the point at which we said, no more of this.
Right. I mean, I get it. I get the medical profession. I understand that they're in the process of trying to heal, but they were just making your dad more sick with the treatment. He's obviously on his deathbed. So at that point, you're looking at it like, okay, do we have him suffer and die a horrible death in the hospital, or do we take him home and let him die with dignity?
Exactly. So what I did was the next morning, after I arrived on a Sunday evening, Monday morning, I called his physician's office, Dr. Archer, and asked to talk with him. And I was telling him my dad's been sick for 2 years. He's miserable. He's told me he doesn't want to live like this anymore. I just laid it out. And I wanted to see if he would mention hospice, because I knew about the hospice benefit because I'd been manager of an advocacy agency through the state of California. So I knew that benefit well. But I just couldn't bring myself to say it because people think it's giving up. Even somebody like me, well-versed in how wonderful that benefit is. But he just kept coming back with, Mr. Valley's very ill. He'll need a stomach tube to continue. So finally, I said, we think it might be time for hospice. And he just got on board immediately. He said, at this point, that's a good option. And then he said those words, it's best when the family decides.
Right.
And I think so often, I've heard people say, well, the doctor didn't tell me he was dying. But the family has to look at their loved one.
Sure.
And see how clearly, but you do need that physician to confirm it.
Yeah. That's a very good point. So there are five of you children, but only two of you were active in your parents' care. Is this correct?
Yes.
So how do your other siblings feel, or do you think that they have read your book?
You know, I really don't know. I come from a family that once you get estranged, you stay estranged.
Wow.
So I don't know if they've read the book. I've got it all over the place on social media and things like that. But they had not spoken to Dad for more than a decade at that point.
Oh, my goodness.
So when my sister Ann lived in Scottsdale, Arizona. I lived in California, as I mentioned. So the two of us were the team. Mm-hmm. And one of my most wonderful memories of those days is how we helped each other out. We were a team and we worked well together, and that made it much easier. But the other two did come and see him like the week before he died. My younger brother, the youngest of the five, was not able to come and actually help. He was the youngest. He was still dealing with young people problems like children and marriage. But he wrote my dad the most beautiful letter.
Yeah, I love that.
A tribute. Yeah, that's another thing, you know, that hospice gave us, that opportunity to share that letter with my father in the most loving way. And so that's what he did. And I think I could be resentful he didn't come and help, but I'm not, because he showed his love the best way he could, mm-hmm. and it came through loud and clear.
Right. What kind of a wedge is, you know, I know families have troubles. I'm the baby of six. You know, we've had our share of ups and downs within my little family or big family. But what happens to, why wouldn't they speak to your dad for over a decade? Your dad seemed like a hardworking man. He provided for all of you kids. He took great care of your mom. He seemed a little stern, but he seemed like a pretty darn good guy.
He was a pretty darn good guy. And the two of them never really got out of that childhood view of him. And I tell everyone I put it in the book, he was a very stern father. He was a mid-century dad, very traditional family, but he was the boss of everybody and the boss of mom, and very strict, yelled a lot. You know, if he got mad, he yelled. And as I grew up and had my own children and my sister Anne, when most adults, when they have children, they soften towards their parents.
Right.
And they see how hard it is. And yet I think with my other two siblings, they just couldn't get past that. And they were very angry. And I think they were afraid to make any move towards reconciliation.
Wow.
They just kept their stand.
Hmm.
And my sister, I was too hot-headed to talk to them. So this was where my sister and I were a good team. She would keep them apprised of what was going on. So mm-hmm. I didn't have to deal with that.
Right.
And that was helpful to me because she was more conciliatory. You know, we're all different. And so I was glad that they were apprised of the situation, but I didn't want to have to deal with them.
Right. Isn't it kind of stunning when you look at life, right? And as you're going through this process with your parents, they had a beautiful home. Your dad had an amazing workshop. He had every fancy tool imaginable. And then they start aging and slowing down, and then sickness arrives. And then all of a sudden, their things are sold in a garage sale. And people are still holding these grudges or these weird things against one another, when in the end, we're all going to die. It's just a matter of how and when. So how silly are these grudges?
You know, they really are. And one of my friends who wrote a review of the book said, unconditional love. She used those two words. And I never thought of that in my family because we were kind of contentious people. But both my sister and I, we just forgave him for whatever childhood, you know, problems we had. And we looked at the big picture. He was a very good father. We were a single income household. He had the entire burden of paying for five kids on his own. And then when we grew up, we had a different relationship. We mm-hmm. had a more mature relationship.
Well, men of that generation, I mean, it's the great generation. Was he in the service?
No, he injured his hand in a farming accident when he was 19, and so he didn't serve.
But he's of that great generation where
the man
got up and worked sun up to sun down and provided and put the food on the table and paid the bills, and the mom stayed home and cooked and cleaned and got the kids off to, you know, Girl Scouts and sporting events. Very, very typical of how I was raised as well in the Midwest. You were from the Midwest, correct?
Ohio, yes.
Yeah, okay. Oh, Ohio. I'm not sure we can be friends. I'm from Michigan.
Uh-oh.
Always that
we've got a rivalry.
Oh, yeah. Always that rivalry. We call it a hiya. Well, I just think it's such a lovely book, and you really expressed yourself, and you didn't hold anything back, which I really appreciate as well. You didn't dance around the truth of what it was like to be in this family. And it wasn't all terrible at all. It was just like you said, you were a contentious tribe.
Well, after I grew up, my parents invited us to go on vacations with them. And we went to the Grand Canyon. We went to a little town called Solvang, a Swiss village in the middle of the Santa Ynez Valley. And I cherish those memories so much. My dad would set up a martini bar, and he converted my husband into a martini drinker in the hotel room. And I had those memories, but those last 29 days, when he knew he was dying, our relationship got so much deeper that he, you know, he trusted me with his financial issues. We were able to talk more openly. One of the things that surprised me very much was how much he took to the caregivers. Because, you know, we've talked about he took care of everything for, you know, 79 and a half years. And then when these women came in to take him to the bathroom and to help him shave and comb his hair, he just luxuriated in it. He loved it. He was able to put down that burden and just let those ladies, and they were all women, do these really personal grooming tasks and take care of him, get him out of the bed into the wheelchair. And that was a huge growth thing that I think he cherished a lot. I said in the book, his last 29 days were some of the most richly lived of his whole life. And
wow.
They were.
Yeah, you know, here you're a big, strong man. You are providing for your family, you know, big family, five children. And then all of a sudden you're reduced to leaning on someone to help you for the most rudimentary tasks, such as going to the bathroom, you know, and to do so with grace. And it's, you know, the letter I think that touched me the most was at the end of the book, which was from one of the hospice workers. She wrote the most beautiful letter about how graceful and how lovely your dad handled himself through everything, and how a lot of their clientele are angry or won't speak to them, or, you know, are just really pissed off at what's happened to their body, and where your dad was a gentleman to the end. And I love that. That tells so much about your dad's character.
I'm so glad that she wrote that letter. What a kind thing for her to do.
Mm-hmm.
And to even say, she said in the letter, "I didn't speak about this at the memorial service because it wouldn't be appropriate." She was sensitive to the fact that she didn't want to get up and criticize other men she took care of at a memorial service. But for her to take that time to write that letter to my mother, I was so pleased I was able to put it in the book. What a wonderful testament.
It really is. I mean, she's telling a couple of the difficult clientele that she had and how they treated her. And then she said, "All of these men are in stark contrast with the quiet, considerate, and gentlemanly manner that Bob Valley handled his last days. He was truly a wonderful person. May God bless you richly with his peace and comfort, Wanda." That's so lovely.
Beautiful.
Yeah, great way to end this book. Loving Choices, Peaceful Passing, Why My Family Chose Hospice. Kathleen Valley Stein is the author and the beautiful lady that I'm speaking with today on The Next Room. Just a really well done memoir. Now, talk to me about, did you know you were going to write this while you were going through this with your mom and your dad and your sister Anne?
No, I didn't. I had been an opinion writer for about 4 or 5 years. And I wrote opinion pieces, mainly not political stuff, just family things, you know, family, some nature, some things about nature, just kind of Sunday paper things, memories. And then I was about in the next year or so, after he passed, I decided I wanted to tackle a book. I wanted to try to write a book as a writer to challenge myself. And so 15 years later, I finished it. It took me a lot longer than I thought. And then reconstructing what happened each day, because the book is about those 29 days.
Right.
And I had a log from the caregivers. My sister kept really good records. So I had to reconstruct what happened on what day. But it was a challenge, and there were so many times when I first started writing, and I thought, who's going to read this? Who's going to be interested in this? And then I just kept plugging away at it, and then I got my friends to read it. I got an editor. So it kind of was a long, slow process.
Did you feel it was cathartic for you to get this all down and then publish your book?
Yeah, I think also as I got along, as I was making progress, I got a passion to share this message.
Mm-hmm.
That was what I felt, that people need to know that they don't have to just sit out in a waiting room in a hospital where your loved one is receiving futile medical treatment.
Mm.
And a lot of people, there's so much misunderstanding. They think, oh, I can't do it. We can't take him home to care for him. We're just not able to do it. And we were just a regular family, and we did it. So I want to share that. 80% of Americans die in hospitals or nursing homes still.
Wow.
And they don't have to. A lot of times they don't have to.
And how much more peaceful is it to be in your own home with your things around, with your loved ones, with your own music? Your dad got to have his martini. He got to have ice cream as much as he wanted. And just how lovely is that? I love that you, in the book, Kathleen, you just took the bull by the horns, too, after the decision was made. And you had your legal pad, and you've got all these lists, and you would just tick everything off one at a time, and then you'd hand it to Ann, and you'd tag she was it, and you'd go rest up, and then she was in there for the next round. You two really did work as a team.
Yes, we did. And, you know, sometimes I think, I don't know how I would have done it by myself.
Yeah.
Because it is a lot. It's a lot of responsibility. And I want to mention the role reversal. Because I, you know, when I hired the home health aides and I hired the prescription service at the retirement community, my parents told me, don't you do that. We don't want to spend the money. That's too expensive. But I looked at them and I knew my mother couldn't take care of my dad. And I knew he needed to have his prescriptions. He needed to have his meds when he needed to have them on time and in the right dose. And I knew they couldn't do it. So I went basically behind their backs and hired all these people. And I was scared to death that they were going to yell at me. Who do you think you are? You know, because they paid for it. They had the money. They had enough money. They weren't rich, wealthy people, but I knew they could afford to do this. So I just reversed roles and I could see what needed to be done. And I did it. And then the biggest surprise of my life was the next morning when I came in after Dad came home from the hospital. He's in his hospital bed. He's freshly shaven. His hair is combed back, clean pajamas. And he says to my husband called to see how he was doing, where did you get such a good wife? Kathy took care of everything, and I'm relaxing in the home. He called the retirement community the home. He was delighted because he knew that he was going to be cared for.
You know, good for you. I know it's difficult because a lot of times, you know, in my family of six, none of us are medical profession. You know, none of us are medical professionals. None of us have hospice training. We're just kids, right? We were our parents' children. So they say it's really important to turn it over to the experts. I mean, you didn't even know how to get your dad up and off his bed and into the wheelchair. And because you started getting really good at asking people for help, you could see how much better it is. And think about it. Do you want your grown daughter taking you to the bathroom or a professional that's trained to do that? So it really is a matter of just allowing others that are trained to do their job. And hospice is a wonderful organization.
They are. And I do want to mention when I tell people we hired home health aides, some families, they just can't do that. And some families, even I've talked to people who said, I wanted to take care of my loved one. I wanted to bathe them. I wanted to shave them. Some people, they're different families than us, obviously. So I don't want to give the impression you can't have hospice if you don't hire aides. You can do it in other words.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I have a friend that cared for her mother with two or three other siblings that were involved, and they cared for her in her final days, and it was no problem. You know, they had hospice come in. They didn't have healthcare workers coming in. You were fortunate to be able to have your parents be able to afford that, you know, but some people live for a really long time and go in and out of the system, you know, with you know, your dad, Bob, only lived 29 days. So, you know, that's thank goodness it was probably quite affordable at that point.
Well, it was a small town. And so it was not as expensive. And right. It was 20 years ago now. So I'm sure it's more expensive now.
Oh, yes.
But it was a mom and pop. It was a husband, wife, caregiver, you know, little company, mom and pop. And the ladies were just wonderful.
Yeah. It is kind of amazing, though. I don't know if people know that they have that option. You know, here you are. You're looking at your dad. It's apparent that he is definitely on his way out. The treatment is not helping him, but only making him sicker at this point. And to make that decision to stop the medical treatment, take him home and let him have a quiet, dignified death in his own home. I don't know if people have the knowledge that they can do that, or if they're just afraid too, you know? I mean, because you had those moments of like, what am I doing? Now what, you know?
Exactly. When the role reversal happened and they started relying on me, I was scared to death. I thought, wait a minute, this is a lot of responsibility. But my sister and I work together. You grow. It's a growth experience.
Yeah. I love that you enjoyed those last days with your dad, you know, and you got to hear him praise you and compliment you. Something that didn't happen frequently in your family or at all, if I'm to understand the story correctly. And here you're in the room and you're probably like, what is going on right now?
I was so excited. It was one of my happiest moments during that whole time to hear him praise me. Correct. That's correct.
Isn't it funny that just kind words coming from the people that you love the most or that have raised you, it holds so much weight to have their, you know, attagirls and pats on the back. I don't know what it is, but I'm welling up just thinking about it. That's just such a beautiful moment with your dad. Well,
we had so many.
Yeah. Loving Choices, Peaceful Passing is the memoir. It's Why My Family Chose Hospice. Kathleen Valley Stein. You can go to her website if you want. It's valleyview.com, and it's Valley with two E's, ValleyVIEW.com. And I'll put the link on the show page. So if you're hearing this interview and you're like, I'm telling you, I thoroughly enjoyed this book. I read it and it took me 2 days. It's just a quick read. Really loved it. It made me think. It made me cry. It made me angry at her siblings, which brought up some of my stuff with my siblings, which is kind of interesting. But you realize that we're here for a minute, and then to be able to help someone like your dad or your mom or a sibling to have some comfort in their last moments, it's a really beautiful honor. Kathleen, we're almost to the end of the show. Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share?
Oh, I think we covered everything. I think the number one thing I want to share with people is that if they want to take their parent home and they're afraid to do it anyway. Because once you get started with the process and you learn to ask for help, because you don't know what you don't know. So as you go through, like with, I wanted to get my dad out of the hospital bed. I didn't know how to get him from the hospital bed to the wheelchair, and the home health aide taught me how to do it with a bear hug. It's called a bear hug. So it's an opportunity for you to stretch beyond what you think you can do. Your reward is, when I think about my father, I have happy, wonderful memories of his last days and not horrifying memories of him dying in intensive care. That's my main message. Just give it a try. Educate yourself.
Great, great final words. I do have one last question. The name of the show is The Next Room. I'm very fascinated with everyone's view on what possibly is next for us after we leave this earthly body and this earthly plane. What do you feel, Kathleen, is in the next room?
I think it's going to be wonderful. I think I'm going to see some of my ancestors and the people that have gone before me. And I was in a terrible auto accident when I was in my 30s. And I had a brief out-of-body experience, not a near death, just out-of-body. And I just felt so wonderful that it just doesn't worry me anymore.
Beautiful.
I don't want it to come. I don't want it to come anytime soon. But when the time comes, and I learned from my father how graciously he walked into the next room, and I've got that as a role model.
How graciously he walked into the next room. Beautiful words. Loving Choices, Peaceful Passing. Why My Family Chose Hospice by Kathleen Valley Stein. Highly recommend this book. I enjoyed it thoroughly. It's a just really a thoughtful, well-done memoir about making those tough choices as we, you know, all are going to be faced with throughout our life. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Kathleen. I appreciate it very, very much.
Well, it was a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to the next room.